I think the starting point of our practice is awareness of ourself. We don't decide to start practice in a dream, you know. We come to practice initially because our mind feels something, and our heart feels something. So awareness of ourself is the starting point of practice. In other words, to see, understand, get a glimpse of how our mind works. This is the starting point. And from there, we will move on to see how it is that our delusion arises and how suffering arises. The starting point of our practice is about the feeling of suffering, awareness of suffering, and the personal intimacy with suffering. practice cannot begin simply out of curiosity or interest or desire for entertainment or something. It has to be, it's always about awareness of what's going on with ourself. And the practice, provides this awareness by shining a light on the workings of the ego. Identifying the raspings of the ego is very vital in our practice, because it provides a window to the source of our suffering. So in that way, Buddhism looks like it's psychology, because both of them are interested in the state of mind and how the mind works. So Buddhism is sometimes confused with a psychological technique. But the practice, actual practice itself, is, of course, not psychology, because it does not, practice does not rely on intellectual analysis of ourself. Practice does not fall back on that analytical analysis. Because, consider when you analyze something, the only way we can analyze something is if it is separate from us. If you hold it at arm's length, you can analyze it. If you hold something away from yourself, you analyze it. But how can you hold yourself at arm's length? So practice is the opposite of separation. Practice is the opposite of isolation. Our spiritual practice is oriented towards intimacy. The intimacy that includes everything, large things and small things. And so, as Suzuki Roshi said somewhere in one of his talks, he said, practice should be based on the idea of selflessness. But that's not easy to understand, he said. if you try to be selfless, that itself is that's a selfish idea. To try to be selfless is a selfish idea. Selflessness arises when we do not try anything. We do not try to do anything. So it is this selfless attitude that is the prerequisite for intimacy and the end of isolation. So, the attitude that we have with us all the time when we practice is that we do not keep things or people at a distance. Not big distance, not small distance, no distance, no gap. No gap between ourself and other. So practice is about being close to people and things through our selflessness, through our awareness. But awareness or mindfulness, when it is practiced, is not simply watching. Like when you're at a stoplight and it's red and you remain aware for it to turn green. You know, you watch the light. But that is not the awareness of practice. Awareness, according to practice, is much more inclusive and much deeper than simply watching. More than just focusing on something. Because if we simply focus on something, there is a separation. There is a me, and there is something. There is me in my car and that stoplight. That's the paying attention. But that's not the awareness of practice. Awareness as practice is to be intimate with every activity. And to be intimate with each activity means we lose any idea of ourself in our activity. There's no separation between myself and this activity. No separation. This is a true awareness. So when we sit in zazen, in cross-legged posture, thinking of nothing, not thinking, beyond thinking, just totally aware of ourself and our surroundings without focusing on anything. No separation. Then we are intimate with everything. So, after one of his talks, after Suzuki Roshi gave a talk in San Francisco, one of the students there said to him, and this was in the very early days of San Francisco Zen Center, somebody said to him, "Do you think we can understand Buddhism?" And he said, "Yes, if you practice. If you know how to practice, you can understand Buddhism if you practice." So the student's question was about the teachings and wisdom of Buddhism. Can we understand Buddhism? But Suzuki Roshi's answer was not limited to just teachings and wisdom? He said, yes, you can, but your understanding is not through the intellect, not through reading, not through analyzing, not that kind of understanding. He meant you can understand Buddhism through your whole body and mind. Put your entire body and mind into each activity. So that when you do something, there is no you and no it. This is how we understand Buddhism. So if you go to the training monastery in Japan, big place with hundreds of monks, and they are training, we call it training, and the main thing that they are doing is not just memorizing the services and memorizing the chanting of the sutras. Main part of the Zen monk's training is to learn how to take care of the smallest detail. Very mundane, you know. Don't have to go to monastery for that. But that's that's their training, to learn how to take care of the smallest detail. What may seem like unimportant, trivial, or even useless. But nonetheless, this is the training of this is the basis of monastic training. The kind of activity that the ordinary mind, the ordinary person would look at it and say, why should I be concerned about that? So this training is very strict. If you forget to pay attention to a detail, somebody will see you and you get scolded. This training is looks like a discipline. But it's not. It's not discipline. Discipline is something discipline is something for the ego. Discipline is something for the small mind. It is practice, is the activity of big mind. So this training is intended to help us express big mind. And I had a chance to participate in that and feel what they do back in 1990. I went to Japan and stayed for a month at Dogen's temple called Koshoji, not far from Kyoto. And each day, all of us, all the monks, would go out into the field in front of the temple and get down on our hands and knees and pull the tiniest little grasses. You couldn't believe how small these grasses were. We'd pull them. We'd spend an hour just pulling these little grasses. No talking. Just do it. We spent hours pulling those teeny grasses. So if somebody would walk by and see us doing that, they would think, why bother? Nobody sees and nobody cares about such small grasses. Oh, they will only grow back. Well, that's true, but that's not the point. The point is to learn how to take care of even the smallest detail that to the rest of the world looks useless and not worth doing. But when you have learned how to do that with selflessness, then nothing in your everyday life will escape your attention. And you will keep your world spotless and well organized and welcoming. So the Zen practice is about learning how to do things selflessly without judgment or questioning and without resistance. This is so we can enable our big mind to replace our small mind when we perform some activity, so that we can become intimate with our activity with these small grasses. There is a saying about the blade of grass becomes Buddha. We take care of a blade of grass same way we would take care of a Buddha. Take care of the smallest thing. Without any concern, without allowing the ego to become concerned with the relative importance of the activity. When we no longer judge our activities based on some kind of criteria of importance, if we have a scale of importance, put activities on some scale of importance, if we can let go of the relative importance of what it is we were doing, treat every activity the same value, then our life has a very peaceful and flowing feeling. It's not easy to have this kind of feeling, as you know, because we are very easily distracted by the excitement of our life. So if we are with the other monks pulling grasses and the mind becomes distracted or wants to become distracted from this so-called boring activity, well, maybe we start to count how many grasses we have pulled to entertain ourselves. Or maybe we look around and think how many grasses we have left to pull. Or when is the tea break coming? But if the mind is selfless, the activity is no problem for us. When we don't feel well, when we feel sick, have a cold or tired, we don't feel like seeing. Maybe we have a headache or maybe ache and pain over here, or we sneeze or we cough, or we have a runny nose or it's hard to breathe, or we have an allergy. Many things. We don't feel like it. We don't feel like sitting. But if we do sit, even under those conditions, we soon realize that our symptoms will diminish when we allow ourselves to be still and quiet, then we will not be bothered by these symptoms. The mind stays calm with its breathing, with our breathing. And the mind is intimate with this simple activity of our breathing. It is still and quiet. Symptoms don't bother us. So, you may feel, you wake up one morning and you have a sniffle. And you say, oh good, I don't have to go sit. Better we say, oh, I have sniffles, I'll sit and it won't bother me. Practice is about having that kind of confident attitude. The unusual thing about practice, according to people who don't really understand it, the practice always seems to arise in the situations that we don't like. Like having a cold, or like pulling weeds, or doing some kind of difficult or painful task. It's in those situations that we learn to practice selflessness through our practice. It's how we take care of activities in our life with big mind, selfless mind. Forget, 9th century China or 10th century or sometime, golden age of Zen. There was a Chinese Zen master, Gisan. And he was taking a bath. And he had an attendant who helped him. He was taking a bath, but the water was too hot. So he asked his monk, his attendant monk, to get a bucket of cold water to cool down the bath. So the monk brought the cold water and cooled the bath. And then there was still some water left in the bucket, so the monk tossed it out. Gisan got really angry. Scolded the monk, why didn't you give the rest of the water to a plant? What right do you have to waste a drop of water? So this story is not about discipline or punishment, or even about wasting water. The story is greater, bigger than those ideas. It is about practice. About taking care of the very smallest thing. Being mindful of the right way to take care of the smallest thing. And not being careless or thoughtless. It's about being intimate with yourself and your world. So, final word from Suzuki Roshi in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. He said, when you are you, you see things as they are, and you become one with your surroundings. And what he meant was, intimacy is enlightenment itself. Does anyone have a question? Umar.
That's you were saying about fitting the one blade of that. Is it when we are going to pick that blade of grass, can we look at it and see what it looks like and what we have picked to see what, see the detail of the blade of grass? Or is that too much? Is that a part of the activity too? You pick up the blade of grass
and analyze it?
No, just look at it, just to see what it looks like.
Well, that's, well, if you do that, you'll only be able to pick one.
Okay.
Just to pick, take care of it. Sometimes, of course, when we have activities, we do have to, you know, analyze something and take care of some problems. But our attitude is, we just take care without analyzing. Be mindful without analyzing. Yes.
I'm just curious, did you do anything in particular with this grass you picked?
We returned them to the earth.
What do you
mean? Put them back so they nourish the ground. Yes.
So, I think you said one comment, if you try to skip with an ego, try to like have a scale of different activities. What I guess we call it prioritization. Which high priority? I have questions, confusion, whatever. So, for example, like in my day-to-day life, like when my son is 3 or 4 years old, at that time it makes sense for me to, you know, take him to play structure and something like that. We do some kind of a prioritization in our mind, no matter, I mean, there's no ego involved in that. It wouldn't really make sense if I didn't do that at that age, and yet then he becomes 15, 16 year old. I mean, I'm not, you see, let's go, you know, it's I don't know whether, I mean, there's no ego, it just makes sense for me to be, like they say, right activity at the right time. Is that not called prioritization? I mean, is there, I don't see how there's an ego involved in that. That's what I didn't follow.
You said that right activity at the right time?
Yeah.
So there's no priority in that.
Okay.
Right activity, right time. you know, if the right time appears for a certain activity, but you say, oh, that's not so important, I'm going to go do this more important. Mm. And you ignore the one whose time it is, because you think something else is more important. This is ego. So when it's time to take garbage, time to take out the garbage, if you say, oh, I have this very important phone call I have to make, I'm not going to take the garbage now. This is the ego. So to take the garbage, because it's time for garbage. Or what... this kind of understanding, this kind of teaching, is very elusive these days because of all the, you know, technology that's available to us. So if you and I are talking, we're having a coffee or something, having a close conversation, and my cell phone rings, and I say, I have to answer this. The time at that moment is for the activity of you and me. This will wait. Don't push this, make this a higher activity than you and me. Don't sacrifice intimacy. But you see, often people say, well, pardon me, I have to take this. And the other person sits there and waits. You see it all the time. And this is a misunderstanding of what we're doing. And thank you.
Picking the grass, that's what, that kind of, it always happens, like you said, somebody passes by and sees you pulling one grass, putting it as, like, what are you doing, right? What's the point? That's the modern world I see around, that somebody who is doing the small things, mundane, you know, but they're very important. If those small things are not done, nobody realizes the big picture, the big show that is seems to be going very smoothly. The small thing you're doing, but everybody wants to do big things. So I'm so intelligent. I'm so aware. I know a lot than many people over here. I'm not made for that. I'm not going to do that. You see that at work too. Nobody wants to do the little, they call it dirty work. Or, you know, I don't like that word when they use it. Work, that's the dirty work. I'm not going to make Excel sheets, no. I'm more knowledgeable.
Yes,
more
yes.
Simple. So, but like you said, that small thing is so important, but that vision is being lost, and how do we bring that vision back? That if we don't have the people who do the small things, then it doesn't matter.
I don't think we can worry too much about what you said, bringing it back, you know, changing the whole world. I don't think we should worry about that. We should just worry about our own space in front of us and taking care of it. as an individual and as a sangha. You know, we take care of this space every week. Clean this floor. When you come in here on a Saturday morning and you look at the floor and you say, wow, it's nice and clean. But we get down on our hands and knees anyhow and clean it. And sometimes people say, well, let's get a mop so we don't have to go on our hands and knees. We say, no, get down there. Learn how to be intimate.